Chapter 21 of the Autobiography of Lord Alfred Douglas. This legamus recorded may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Chapter 21. After Oscar's conviction, I remained in France for a time, and then went to Naples and Capri. I had a villa at Capri for about 6 months, and I stayed there right through the summer, spending most of the time in the water. During this period, I wrote some of my best poetry. I then returned to Paris, and while I was there I was asked by the Mercure de France, the well-known literary monthly magazine, to write an article giving my version of the Oscar Wilde affair. I accepted the invitation, and I wrote an article for the paper, in English, for at that time I did not know French well enough to write an article in the language, though I spoke French well, and ended by speaking it almost like a Frenchman. The article was translated into French, and in it I included a quantity of extracts from the letters which Oscar had written to me while he was in Holloway Jail, and while he was staying at the house of the Levisons, when he was on bail. I believe my article and the letters, if their publication had not been prevented by the possibly well-meant but disastrous interference of Robert Harborough Sherard, would have had the effect of completely rehabilitating Oscar, at any rate in France. Unfortunately, however, Sherard saw Oscar in prison and told him that I was going to publish all his letters in a newspaper. And, knowing nothing whatever about my motives or the nature of the article, which I would have been glad to explain to him if he had taken the trouble to see me and inquire, entirely misrepresented the whole affair to Oscar. Ross, for his part, did the same. The result was that Oscar, according to Sherard's story, commissioned him to stop the publication of his letters. Sherard was a personal friend of the translator of my article, whose name I have forgotten, but who was a well-known man of letters and a member of the staff of the Mercure de France. And he saw this gentleman and told him that Oscar begged that his letters should not be published. Consequently, the Mercure de France asked me to omit the letters from my article. I therefore decided that it was useless to publish the article without the letters, and in view of the attitude towards me of Oscar, as retailed by Ross, who told me that he was commissioned by Oscar to demand the handing over of the letters to him, Ross. I have already described what I said to Ross when he approached me on the subject. Thus, for the second time, Oscar Wilde, by his own misguided action, and acting on the bad advice of those who had the access to him which was denied, by his own fault, to me, dealt a fatal blow to his chances of rehabilitation. When he begged me, at Sir Edward Clarke's imperative behest, to leave the country before his trial, and to put it out of the question that I should be called as a witness on his behalf, he threw away his chances of acquittal, and now, when he prevented me, who at that time loved him passionately, and had no thought but to try to help him, and lift him up out of the gutter into which he had fallen, from defending him, as I could have done so effectively, he once again threw away his trump card. My article and his letters were designed to show that there was a fine and noble side to the whole of this business, which Oscar's enemies, assisted by his feeble defenders and fat-headed friends, had dragged down into the kennel and the stews. I wanted to lift the affair out of the atmosphere of the police court and the Old Bailey into the higher air of romance and tragedy. The letters which I intended to publish showed Oscar in a light which has never been revealed to anyone except myself and the few people to whom, at various times, I showed the letters. At the time he wrote them, the anguish of his mind, coupled with what shone out at that time unmistakably as his real love for me, lifted him into realms of altruistic beauty and pathos, which he never reached at any other time of his life or in any of his published works. I have never known anyone who could read these letters without genuine emotion. I have shown them to persons who hated and despised Oscar Wilde, and they have read them and shed tears over them. They showed him to be, at that time, one who had forgotten self in his love for someone else. They were a million miles removed from the artificial, slightly repellent epistles which were produced against him at the Old Bailey by my father as specimens of his attitude to me, with their hyluses and hyacinthuses, slim gilt soles, flower-like lips, and all the other bag of tricks. These letters had the ring of genuine feeling, tragic emotion, sublimated passion. For once in his life, and for a period extending over many weeks, facing, as he was, a world which was one vast nightmare of unknown terror and hostile glares, he thought more about someone else than of himself. The letters were really noble and really fine. The alchemy of passionate sincerity transmuted his thoughts into pure gold. One of them contained an apologia for his whole attitude towards me, and what I meant to him, which would have gone far to disarm the criticism of his worst enemies. Once these letters had been published and read, there would have been an end of that terrible laughter of the world, which, as one of Wilde's characters says in Lady Windermere's Fan, is a thing more tragic than all the tears the world has ever shed. I do not believe that my father himself could have read them without a feeling that here was something which he did not understand, and which could not be spat upon without terrible risk to the spitter. I defy anyone who retains the least spark of honour to spit upon the real, essential love of one human being for another. And when I say love, I mean love, and not physical passion or desire or anything else. I say in excelsis, for love essentially must needs be chaste, and being contracted to unchastity, even in marriage, knows essential loss, and falls into a malady of waste, squandering the expended spirit's minted fee for that which, in itself, is worthless dross. As Oscar said to me in one of these letters, pleasure hides love from us, but pain reveals it in its essence. He knew that then, but he forgot it all too soon. I bitterly regret that these letters were not published at the time to which I refer. I bitterly regret that years afterwards I burnt them with my own hand, on the advice of a friend, at a time when I was fool enough to be ashamed of having received such letters from a man, and of having treasured them for so many years. If I had them now, I would print them all in this book, provided, of course, that the executors of Oscar Wilde, or one or another of his faithful friends, did not obtain an injunction to restrain me from doing so. As it is, they are lost for ever, and with them is lost for ever the evidence of what Oscar Wilde really was, once, at any rate, for a few weeks in his life. I have recorded in this book a few of the phrases from them that have stuck in my memory. I wish my memory were better. I wish I had stuck to my own original instincts, which are always right in this sort of matter. I wish it had occurred to me that the friend who advised me to burn the letters was also a friend of Robert Ross, and that the advice he gave me to destroy these letters was tendered only a few months before the trial of the ransom action for libel. A little while after this episode of the cancellation of my article, the Mercure de France, which is also, of course, a publishing house, offered to publish a collection of my poems. The volume appeared with a page-by-page French prose translation. The translation was ably done by the late Eugène Tardieu, a man of considerable talent and charming personality who was on the staff of the Echo de Paris. The book was published at 3 francs 50 cents, and there were, if I remember right, 50 copies de luxe and 25 de grand luxe, priced at 10 francs and 25 francs respectively. I am informed that a single copy of the Édition des Grands Lux on Japanese vellum was sold about 2 years ago at the Maison Drouot for 10,000 francs, about £80 at the present rate of exchange. I do not myself possess a single copy of the book. Of those I had, I gave away many, and the rest have disappeared. Footnote. Since I wrote this, my friend, Mr. A.J. A. Simmons, has kindly presented me with a copy. End footnote. The book has been out of print for at least 20 years. 1,000 copies were printed. It was well received in Paris, and from the moment of its appearance my status as a poet was generously conceded by French men of letters, and never afterwards disputed. The Mercure de France, on at least two occasions, asked me to consent to reprinting the volume, but this I declined to do, for the reason that it contained certain poems which, although there is really no harm in them, and poetically speaking, some of them are exceedingly good, were brought up against me at the instance of Mr. Ransom, or, I suppose I ought more properly to say, at the instance of Robert Ross, for I have long exonerated Mr. Ransom from any blame in the matter of that libel action. In cross-examination at the High Court. I felt so aggrieved and disgusted at this that I have preferred to withdraw the poems altogether from circulation, and I accordingly refused permission to the Mercure de France to reprint the book containing them. No doubt they will be reprinted after my death, but meanwhile the book containing them is practically unobtainable for love or money. I am glad to think that my first poems were published in France, a country which I have always loved, and I recall with satisfaction that Shelley's first volume of poetry was published at Pisa. From the beginning, when was aught but stones for English prophets? I quote from one of the sonnets in my collected edition. Not that my poetry has been stoned in England. On the contrary, it was very well received when it first appeared in 1899, published anonymously as The City of the Soul, by Grant Richards. But it was published in Paris, and appreciated by some of the finest writers in France, notably Mallarmé, 3 years before I could get a publisher to look at it in London. End of chapter 21.